engineer. Won't you shed a tear for my yellow rose? My yellow rose and her bloodstained clothes. Her grandpa fought old Chiang Kai-shek, that no-good, low-down, dirty rat who used to order his troops to fire on the women and children. Imagine that. Imagine that. And in the spring of 48, Mao Zedong got quite irate, and he kicked that old dictator Chiang out of the state of China. Chiang Kai-shek came down in Formosa, and they owned the island of Quemoy. Shells ran across the China Sea, and they turned Formosa into a shoe factory called Taiwan.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at R.J. are unhappy over cuts in benefits contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The Machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentin, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Have you been chipped yet? You could be soon. For the Food and Drug Administration has now cleared the way for a Florida corporation, Applied Digital Solutions, to market a tiny electronic device called VeriChip that is surgically implanted under the skin of your arm or hand. Don't worry, says the corporation soothingly. Being chipped doesn't hurt you, and it's really for your own good. For example, they say, if you have an accident, your implanted chip could contain vital medical information that could be accessed by an ambulance crew, assuming the crew has bought a handheld chip-reading scanner, which Applied Digital also happens to sell. Besides coup the corporate hawkers, being chipped is a matter of great personal convenience for you. No longer would you have to carry cumbersome ID cards to get into your workplace. You could have all the required ID stored on your chip, right inside your body. And think of the convenience of not having to fumble with credit cards. Instead, your credit numbers literally are implanted in you. So rather than running your cards through a scanner, a retailer can simply scan you. Talk about consumer progress. VeriChip turns your own body, your very own self, into a barcoded payment system. After all, says Applied Digital, our country has been implanting such devices in millions of cattle and pets, and it has worked beautifully. So why not humans? For you fussy libertarians who see Big Brother looming behind every scientific breakthrough like VeriChip, the company says that being implanted is voluntary. So where's the worry? This is Jim Hightower saying, the worry, of course, is that being chipped will not stay voluntary. Corporations and government will soon insist that their employees, frequent travelers, protesters, and others be tagged for security reasons. To rebel against this effort to turn us into a nation of cattle, call the Electronic Privacy Information Center, 202-488-1140.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massage and gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
General madness in the White House. Now, it looks like George Tenet has written a book in which he is trashing Condi Rice. This, of course, being the question that had the Democrats been Republicans, they would have been raising throughout the last election. Which is, how is it that 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch and he took no responsibility for it? Why is it that he was repeatedly warned that this thing was about to happen? And did virtually nothing to stop it, and in fact, in many cases, blocked efforts to stop it, shut down investigations of Saudis that were close to the bin Laden family, apparently because they were close to the Bush family. If the Republicans had been running the Democratic campaign, that would have been front and center. He let us down! He allowed our country to be bombed! Dick Cheney was in charge of the counterterrorism task force, and between the time that they took power and 9/11, it never once met. That would have been the Democratic or the Republican rant had the Republicans been running the Democratic campaign. And, you know, it probably would have won. But in any case, Condi Rice looks like, according to... Well, this is the spin, let's say. This the rumor Bill Harlow denies it, the book collaborator. Tenet isn't talking. But a couple of different sources in the publishing industry are saying Condé is in the crosshairs. Tenet is not happy. So we'll see how that plays out. I would suspect she should be, frankly. The Gonzalez story continues. What amazes me, and, you know, if it weren't for all this brouhaha around Votergate, which I confess to having, in some ways, at some level, some of it initiated and perhaps overly hysterically, let's say. That is, well, you know, we talked about this last week. In any case, I had been considering writing an op-ed piece, and so I guess I'll do an op-ed radio here. If you were potentially, if you were accused of a crime, wouldn't it be nice to be able to have your best friend and your lawyer be appointed as the prosecutor? I mean, wouldn't that just be marvelous? Put your best friend and lawyer in charge of any possible investigation of you yourself. Now, traditionally, we have had split houses in Senate. I mean, the majority of American history, or a good chunk of American history, I haven't done a year-by-year analysis, but certainly in my lifetime during the majority of it, the presidency, the House, and the Senate, in various ways, were held by one or by both parties. In other words, you had a Democratic president, Republican House, a Democratic Senate, Republican president, Democratic House, and blah, blah, blah. This is how Watergate was able to be investigated. Is, you know, Sam Ervin, a Democrat, they had Democrats controlling the Senate, and they initiated this investigation of Richard Nixon in his second term. Well, without the traditional balance of power in Washington, D.C., that is established by virtue of the fact that you have one party, you have two parties spread out, let's say, amongst the three and a half branches of government, the three branches, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative, but the legislative, of course, split into two pieces, the House and Senate. And so the investigative capacity of the Senate and the House of Representatives right now into all things, all crimes Republican, is pretty much zero. Ain't going to happen. Yeah, there. You know, from Ramsey Clark's the articles of impeachment that Ramsey Clark wrote that were offered in the House 2 years ago against George W. Bush for illegally invading Iraq, to numerous other investigations of Cheney and Halliburton, investigations of Bush and the Bin Laden family, investigations, just a whole series of them. The Democrats have proposed over the last 4 years of George Bush have gone nowhere. And, of course, they've gone nowhere because DeLay and Hastert in the House and Bill Frist, healthcare leech and multimillionaire Bill Frist in the Senate, have prevented them from going anywhere. They have the power to block them, which leaves the Justice Department, the top cop. Well, this was a role that J. Edgar Hoover knew how to, you know, well, he was at the FBI, of course, not the head of the Justice Department, but within the Justice Department, certainly knew how to play well. He had presidents living in terror of him for, you know, many of the years that he was around living. And frankly, it was because he was living in terror, because he was afraid that his secrets would come out. But it's kind of another story. But the point is, the Justice Department and the divisions under it, including the FBI, are the ones charged with following up on crimes. For example, the outing of Valerie Plame. And here we have, which, by the way, happened 515 days ago. And so here we have now the guy who may be charged with one of these crimes or certainly whose good buddies may be charged with one of these crimes, has appointed as head of the Justice Department, who? The guy who was his lawyer when he was the governor of Texas. The guy who was his lawyer when he was president of the United States, when many of these crimes may have been committed. Alberto Gonzalez. What baffles me, I mean, there's all this discussion about Gonzalez. Well, Gonzalez wrote the torture memo. Yeah. Gonzalez signed off on all these death warrants and never mentioned to the president in his summaries things like mitigating evidence, evidence of innocence, failure of counsel, and so on and so forth. Yeah. But nobody's raising the question, isn't this putting the fox in charge of the hen house? I mean, having the president's essentially personal lawyer, I realize as White House counsel, he's technically working for you and me. Tell that to John Dean. When he tried to work for you and me and said to Richard Nixon, you know, there's a cancer on the presidency here, this Watergate thing, what did Nixon do? He fired him. So here we have now the president putting the fox in charge of the hen house. This is the thing that, frankly, number one, concerns me the most about Gonzalez's nomination, aside from the fact that, you know, it's a setup so that he's not going to be there very long. He'll be the second or third person nominated for the Supreme Court. You could mark my words on that as well. But this is, you know, the Plame investigation is supposed to be on. There's all these investigations that are supposed to be happening or that could be happening. Somehow I suspect they won't. Now today we learned U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell has resigned. Some folks are speculating he may take a position, replace Wolfison at the World Bank, or maybe he'll go back to his old job that he had before he became Secretary of State as one of the directors of AOL Time Warner, the media combine and conglomerate that owns CNN, among other things. Who knows? But Secretary Colin Powell has resigned today. This along with Spencer Abraham, who's been on this program, Energy Secretary, Education Secretary Rod Page, because he does all these wonderful things in Houston with the Houston school system. And then it turned out that it was Enron accounting. All the statistics were fudged. That's another story that went nowhere. You know, that was a major scandal. Just kind of bounced off him. And Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman, formerly of the Cattlemen's Association. And, of course, Ashcroft and Evans resigned earlier in the week. So the changes are happening. Changes are happening. The one thing that's for sure is that we're going to see more good buddies, more cronies, and of particular consequence to we the people of the United States, more people who are very, very wealthy and heavily tied into the largest corporate interests in the United States being appointed to these positions. See, this is how it's happened in the past. It's just, you know, absolutely predictable. Anyhow, all that said, welcome to our program today. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. The website is tomhartman.com if you want to drop into the chat room. Rama says, Ann Coulter for Secretary of Education. Yeah, I can see it. Somehow, well, it would surprise me, actually. It would. But anyhow, if you want to drop into our chat room, and pleased to have you with us. It's Monday, the 15th of November, the beginning of a new week, a new day, and an interesting new era. Well, speaking of computer glitches, the first one has been found now that actually changed an election. I mean, first of all, let's put these things in perspective. Cynthia Butler of one of the K Street Wall firms, the Butler Law Firm, makes the note, and I think this is fascinating. She says, the percentage volume of error or glitches or miscalibration of electronic voting machines reported nationally in the 2004 election. Now, this is just the stuff we know about. if transposed to the FAA air traffic computers, would crash flights every 15 minutes in the sky. If that statistical percentage of error were transposed to NASA's computers, all flights to space would dissolve in the ozone. If that error rate were transposed to your ATM machine, you'd be hiding your cash under the mattress. If the error percentage, especially in voting machines, was transposed to the electronics in your car, you'd be taking a bus to work 3 days a week. Yet somehow, Cynthia Butler notes, we want to say that while we expect our ATMs to give us paper receipts and work every time, and our air traffic computers to give perfectly accurate results, and the NASA systems to be on go, and the electronics in our car to get us to our jobs and back without a breakdown, electronic voting machines can miscalibrate to register the opposite of decisions and do so by enormous margins. There are reports of people pushing the button for Kerry and thank you for voting for George Bush, and on it goes. So anyhow, the first election that's actually been changed as a result of one of these glitches is now part of American history. I'll tell you about it right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel? Satellite?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs.
And welcome back. Ah, the masters of war. I don't know if you caught the news story over the weekend that there was some kid who had used that song in a some sort of school event, and they'd called in the Secret Service because there are lyrics in that song that they interpreted as a threat against the President of the United States. It's believe it or not. Anyhow, the first race now to have been reversed as a result of a so-called computer glitch. Now, here's why I say so-called computer glitch, because according to the computer manufacturer, the same software was on thousands of machines in dozens of counties in multiple states. And yet only the machines in this one particular county had this so-called glitch, which some suggest in the computer hacking community is pretty clear evidence that these particular computers were hacked. But in any, you know, again, who knows? It's black boxes. But here's the story from the Associated Press. A Democrat gained enough votes to bump a Republican from victory. Now, isn't it funny how when they discover the glitches, it's always, oh, gee, we made a mistake. The Republicans got too many votes. A Democrat gained enough votes to bump a Republican from victory in a city council race after a recount prompted by computer glitch and optical scan voting. Again, the optical scanners. The glitch in the Findlar Election Company voting scan system had recorded straight Democratic Party votes for Libertarians and vice versa. So this was a vote of 4,564 to 4,470. It doesn't mention the impact it might have had on the Kerry race. This was in Indiana. But having anybody who voted straight party Democratic actually be registered as straight party Libertarian was enough to flip a city council seat. And in this particular area. And who knows what else and where else? Who knows? 1-866-889-8894. Tom in McAllen, Texas on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, you're live and on the air. What's up?
Great. Well, since you just mentioned about the voting, the only real honest voting we could ever have in this country is paper ballots, a verifiable paper trail. And the only way that we could probably change it to where it could be honest is everyone understands the black box voting fraud and then just votes absentee ballot, notarize a certified true copy of the original, at least two of them, one for you and one that you send certified mail return receipt to whom you voted for,
yeah,
and vote absentee ballot.
Here's the problem with that, Tom. When you vote absentee ballot, you vote on a ballot card that will be optically scanned by a Diebold computer, just like the ones that just flipped, like I just described.
They're not counting those things in.
No, they don't. The state of Oregon, for example, where they have mail-in voting. You know, some folks are suggesting, oh, let's just do what Oregon does, mail-in voting. And in fact, we're on the air in Coos Bay, Oregon, one of our affiliates. If anybody in Oregon has further thoughts on this, give us a shout. But my understanding is that, number one, Diebold OptiScan machines scan those Oregon ballots. And number two, if you were to have national voting by mail, the ballots become currency. You know, people could be going around saying, hey, I'll pay a buck a piece for ballots and collecting ballots. And, I mean, you know, it could be a real mess. I mean, this is why we have polling places.
Right.
So I don't think that these are easy answers. The other point is I do think that it is possible for us to have secure electronic voting. It's just that it has to be absolutely transparent. It has to be run by government bureaucrats in a way that anybody can look over their shoulder at any part of the process at any time with open source software code.
Right. But you talk about the corporate elite. That's definitely what's going on in our nation right now, and there's an excellent website, teamlaw.org, that goes into explaining that to people.
Team Law, T-E-A-M?
T-E-A-M-L-A-W.org organization.
Okay, great.
And they have a historical timeline.
Yeah, okay. There's a bunch of those out there, and there's one at, if you go to tomhartman.com and click on corporate power, I believe is the link. It takes you to the website for my book, Unequal Protection, and there's a bunch of information on there, too. Thanks for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at RJR, unhappy over cuts in benefits, contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentin, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
back. Blue states and red states. This is fascinating. With the blue states in hand, the Democrats have firm control of 80% of the world's fresh water. This including the Great Lakes, of course. Over 90% of our pineapple and lettuce, California. 93% of the artichoke production, California. 95% of America's export quality wines, California. 90% of all cheese production, I guess that'd be Wisconsin, maybe. And the Northeast here, Vermont, I know we make a lot of cheese here. Most of the U.S. low sulfur coal, all living redwood sequoias and condors, all the Ivy League and Seven Sisters schools, plus Stanford, Caltech, and MIT. We can live simply but well. The red states, on the other hand, now have to cope with 88% of all obese Americans and their projected health care cost spike, 92% of all U.S. mosquitoes, 99% of all Southern Baptists, 100% of all televangelists, Rush Limbaugh, Bob Jones University, Clemson, and the University of Georgia. A high price to pay for controlling the president. A little note Jim Turr sent along to me. I thought it was a good one. I want to put this on the record because I think this is important, and there's a story within the story here. A week ago Sunday, I sent an article into Common Dreams. I had spoke with Jeff Fisher. I'd been contacted by this guy who'd been running for the United States Congress from Florida, Jeff Fisher. And he said he had proof that the vote had been hacked. He had multiple sources of the proof, this, that, and the other thing. And I interviewed him. I interviewed his campaign manager. I talked to a couple of other sources that he led me to. And one of those was referring to some statistical information that had been compiled by a woman named Kathy Dopp. I tried to get a hold of Kathy, was unable to reach her. But her information looked pretty solid, and I'd read two analyses of her information, and I thought I understood it. And so I wrote a piece for Common Dreams saying, evidence mounts that the vote was hacked. Within an hour or two of this, Louise and I went out for lunch, and when we came back, within an hour or two, there were a couple of emails in my inbox. So one was from a fellow by the name of Anthony Lapp, or maybe it's Lappe, it's L-A-P-P-E, of GNN-TV, Guerrilla News Network TV. And one from Kathy Dopp herself, responding to one of my earlier inquiries. And Anthony said, I called down to a couple of these Florida counties and talked to the elections folks, and these guys have been voting Republican forever. So I think that you've got your facts wrong. And so I double-checked what he had said, and sure enough, he was right. And then I called Kathy Dopp, and she said, you've got the information that I said right, but you've got your interpretation of it wrong. And so I contacted Common Dreams. We were now maybe 3 hours into the story, 2 or 3 hours into the story, and said, I've made a mistake. We need to fix this. And I corrected, I wrote a correction and refocused the story from, little counties were flipped from Republican, from Democrat to Republican, to Kathy Dopp's original analysis, ignoring Jeff Fisher's conspiracy theory, that there were anomalies depending on the kind of machine that was published. Now, in the meantime, a small industry, now here's the problem. First of all, that first article, which had factual errors in it, just went all over the Internet. In fact, there's a copy of it today on Michael Moore's website. I have sent a couple of emails to his webmaster over the last week saying, please replace it with the correct article. They haven't. If any of you know how to get in touch with Michael Moore, tell him, please replace that article with the correct one. He can find the correct one at TomHartmann.com. Click on Articles on Democracy. Anyhow, and the correct one, of course, is on Common Dreams, but it's in their archives now. This, and I want to say right up front, this is my fault for rushing a story out. Something that in the 7 years when I worked as a reporter all day every day, on the one hand there was always the pressure to get the story out, the other, triple check your facts, and I blew it on this one. But anyhow, does anybody know if there's this little industry that has grown up of people claiming that they're the ones who informed me. In fact, there's a piece on Common Dreams today by a guy, what's his name? Galbraith. claiming that he informed me that my facts were wrong. And then he proceeds to write a piece refuting my original incorrect article. And then wraps it up saying we all need to go to mail-in ballots like they have in Oregon, which, as I said, is a little flaky, but or a little, you know, maybe it's possible, but it's this is not the solution, in my opinion. It may be part of a solution. But in any case, there's been, you know, a number of people who've come out and said, you know, hey, I set Hartman straight. And, in fact, I did answer a lot of emails. You know, I still have about 700 of them I haven't even read yet. But two people saying, you know, no, we fixed this. We got that. We corrected that. And he was one of them. But anyhow, Kathy Dopp is standing behind her analysis. Josh Middledorf of Temple University, Ph.D., is standing, says she's solid. I spoke this morning with another researcher who has compared Dopp's analysis with the CNN exit polls and says it's even more startling. That story is developing. Hopefully I can, you know, now I am triple fact checking everything. So hopefully we'll have some more on that soon. Ralph Nader, based on a similar kind of analysis, has decided to call for a recount in New Hampshire. But really the largest issue is, can we trust the counting of our vote when it's inside a machine and it's invisible and it's being held in software that private corporations claim we have no right to see? Back on November 24th of 2000, when the Gore-Bush vote was grinding its way to the Supreme Court, when George Bush was suing Al Gore to prevent Florida from counting the entire vote, Rush Limbaugh, on his program, quoted Joseph Stalin. He says, those who cast the votes decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything. You know, within a year, Limbaugh's Republicans, led by Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert in the House and Bill Frist in the Senate, were fighting hard to keep their corporate friends counting the vote by blocking legislation introduced into the House by Rush Holt, this House Resolution 2239, and in the Senate by Senators Bob Graham and Hillary Clinton, so Senate Bill 2313. The Senate version is called the Restore Elector Confidence in Our Representative Democracy Act, and it would simply require, it doesn't get corporations out of the act, which, in my opinion, doesn't go far enough. But anyhow, it simply requires voter-verified paper ballots to be randomly audited, and to be randomly audited on these machines. And during the last 2 years, neither bill has made it out of committee because the Republicans haven't wanted it out, you know. Last week, as I mentioned here on this program, Ed Gillespie at a National Press Club event said that he felt that we should do away with exit polls because in the last three elections, 2000, 2002, and 2004, the exit polls all showed the Republicans losing when, in fact, the computer-controlled voting machine showed the Republicans winning. And he says this is dispiriting to Republicans. Alex Pelosi, Nancy's daughter, has a movie out, a new film. It's called Diary of a Political Tourist. There's actually clips of it on the Internet. And Congressman Peter King, a frequent guest on Crossfire, is at the White House, at a function at the White House. And this is, as I take it from the context of the movie, a day or two before the election. Certainly it's before the vote has been counted. Excuse me. And Peter King says, it's already over. The election's over. We won. Pelosi asks him, how do you know that? King says, it's all over but the counting, and we'll take care of the counting. So here we have Republican-affiliated corporations secretly handling our vote. Huge differences between exit polls and machine-based polls. And some of them are, this is really fascinating. In Illinois, where they have paper ballots, the exit polls and the machine tallies line right straight up. In Maine, paper ballots, exit polls, machine tallies line straight up. On the other hand, in New Hampshire, the exit poll and machine tallies hugely vary. In North Carolina, they hugely vary. In Florida and Ohio, they hugely vary. And so, yeah, this is raising some questions. The Republican Party is fighting legislation that would make the vote transparent. Republicans say they'll take care of the counting, and now RNC Chairman Gillespie calls for an end to exit polls. To the extent that some people thought, based on the first in-error version of my article on Common Dreams, a noble and extraordinary website, by the way, that a smoking gun of voting fraud had definitely been found and have now become skeptical and thus may abandon efforts at real investigation or reform, this is a tragedy for which I take full responsibility. On the other hand, to the extent to which this issue has been raised and is being pursued by many, this episode will hopefully turn out to be a good thing. Some very interesting rocks are being overturned, the one I just mentioned, for example. The voting machine that was taking straight party Democratic votes and putting them for libertarians. And there may be new energy behind Rush Holt's bill to force greater transparency for electronic voting. Every responsible American wants to move beyond this election and its results. It's vital that progressives and liberals in particular immediately work to develop a well-crafted message and rapidly engage today's fight for the hearts and souls of America's voters. It is. We have to. And yet at the same time, we also have to resolve the issues raised by this election, both old-fashioned voter suppression fraud, as Greg Palast so well writes about, and the possibility of electronic tampering. And we need to do so quickly, in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Israel, one of our truck drivers listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, I believe. Hey, Israel, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. There's something that 4 years ago was discussed about how to make the election right and how to do it correctly. And suddenly, I feel like a lot of voters, because the essence of democracy is the vote, that all the voters must be counted and must be counted correctly. That's the essence of democracy. I feel like it's been dealt a sold hand again. And I don't understand why the Democratic National Committee or the Democratic Party won't go immediately to the Supreme Court, immediately cancel this election, you do another election, whatever. There has to be accountability. It can't be that we'll discuss it once every 4 years and then what the voter decides, it doesn't matter. The company will decide, it will go into the White House, it will be in the Congress, it will be in the Senate. This is absolutely unheard about it. I mean, this is...
You know, virtually...
democracy.
I know.
Democracy.
You know, Brazil has been talking with, IBM about computerizing their elections. But basically, most of the advanced democracies in the world, if somebody came along and said, we're going to give you voting machines, and you can't look at the source code, they would laugh them out of business. I mean, that would just be the end of it. They would just laugh them out.
Right. But, so I believe that this election been tainted. I mean, if the election been tainted, that means the will of the people is not being decided.
Yeah, perhaps.
There's some back room, back alley, and we become a republic. I mean, republic banana. I don't know what.
Yeah, banana republic. I understand what you're saying, Israel, and I absolutely agree with you. And that's the problem. It's not even the reality that is the problem. I mean, it may well be that the corporations just absolutely did the best job they could, and counted the votes accurately. May well be, but we don't know. I mean, what was it? Herod's wife? I forget the biblical reference. But you have to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. And having private corporations control the vote, not a good one. Not a good one. And now we got Ken Blackwell in Ohio. Now, this is not about electronic voting. He's decided to throw out the provisional ballots if people forgot to write their date of birth on the outside of the envelope. You know, this, of course, the provisional ballots being, all those people who got those phone calls in Ohio saying, that voting poll or the polling place that you think you're supposed to go to, you're supposed to actually go to a different one. Here's the address. So they show up at the different one and the people say, well, you're not on the list. Here's a provisional ballot. Well, it was all registered Democrats who got these phone calls, as far as anybody can tell. Who made the phone calls? We don't know. Is the FBI going to investigate this? To the best of my knowledge, no. There has been no discussion about an FBI investigation of this. And yet this is vote fraud. I mean, this is a crime. And so then these people show up and they cast provisional ballots. And so you've got a very high bet. A large chunk of the provisional ballots are Democrats. And Blackwell says, well, if they didn't write their birthday on the outside, throw it away. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, your thoughts.
Hey, Tom, it's Thessalonians, and it's Caesar's wife that must avoid the appearance
of Caesar's wife, thank you. Thelonious? said?
Thessalonians.
In Thessalonians. You're right. Yes, okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So, at any rate, I had
Paul's letter to the, yes.
Yeah, years ago, I was living in Germany, and I was visiting Switzerland, and I was in a canton, and they have these plebiscites. And it was amazing because everybody got together, everybody was in the same room, and what they did away with in Switzerland, and maybe this is what we have to do to get transparency, they don't have secret ballots.
Right, they did it the way that the Iowa caucuses were done, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do it as what we would call caucuses, yeah.
And yeah. I just wanted your thoughts. I mean, you know, I appreciate the concept that the founders had on secret ballots, but maybe we've gotten to the point with this, we just can't afford it.
I think we need to stay with secret ballots. I mean, you have in Switzerland a fairly, well, I was going to say a fairly homogenous population. It's actually not. There are several different districts that speak three different languages.
Right.
But, you know, I am concerned about the possibility of a forceful personality pushing things. You know, and I mean, you see this in juries, you know,
yep.
Today, you know, it's in the news. And I'm concerned about that. I really think that people just need to make up their mind and mark it down on a piece of paper in secret. I think the founders had it right. You know, it may well work. It may work just fine for Switzerland. There's a different sense of community there. It's a much smaller country, a dramatically much smaller country. I don't think it would work here. But, you know, it's worth discussing. Thanks, Chuck, for the call. Appreciate it.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Friday in Santa Cruz, California, 45 people turned out for a solidarity rally in support of embattled workers at Sunshine Villa. Wind correspondent Vinnie Lombardo has more.
Santa Cruz should be where?
Sunshine Villa is unfair!
Yolanda Moya has worked at Sunshine Villa for more than 3 years as a certified nursing assistant. Since February, Moya has been a key organizer in the SEIU contract drive. She says workers at Sunshine Villa are underpaid and receive too few health benefits for the heavy workload.
Many times we were short staffing.
Workers also complain of mistreatment by Sunshine Villa managers. Moya says the situation results in poor service to the residents. Recently, she discarded a table ornament that a resident had been chewing on. Moya says it was a health hazard. Managers apparently disagreed.
On October the 5th, they suspend me because I threw away a plastic vegetable from the garbage. And on October the 12th, they terminate me with no reason.
Union reps believe Moya was fired for her organizing efforts. In July, workers at Sunshine Villa voted by a margin of 4-1 in favor of union representation. Joe Keffer, organizing director with the SEIU Local 415, says Sunshine Villa lawyers immediately filed 25 challenges with the regional director of the NLRB in Oakland. When these were dismissed, Sunshine Villa attorneys appealed to Washington. Last week, Keffer says the NLRB certified the union.
So now we can go in, start raising the issues, and we'll start negotiating our first contract. We expect that they're going to come in there and fight us aggressively and challenge every word that we put on the table.
Joan Bosworth, executive director of Sunshine Villa, snubbed repeated attempts for comments on this story. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We bang the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Heal and Hollers. I want to welcome a new sponsor. They sent us some of their products, and this is really cool stuff. This is a little tiny company in Old Joe, Arkansas. And Healin' Hollers, H-E-A-L-I-N dash, no G in the healing, H-E-A-L-I-N dash hollers.com, H-O-L-L-E-R-S.com. They ought to, you know, I've got like four different misspellings for Tom Hartman. They all point to the same place. They ought to get the H-E-A-L-I-N-G and also, it's like $15 a year, point to it. But I'm not going to tell them how to run their business. Anyhow, they've got some great products. HealinHollers.com. Just wanted to make sure you knew about it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Robertson in Williston, North Dakota is on the line. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I'm that vet that called you back last week sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you. I want to thank you from the very depths of my soul. You have restored in me something I didn't think I could find, and that is, you've got courage, boy.
How so?
I mean, you got the guts to come up and face something that a lot of people don't, and that is that, yeah, I too can make mistakes, and I'm capable of being strong enough.
Oh, you're talking about my Peace and Common Dreams that I...
You just did was just fascinating. I don't hear that from the right-wing talkers. They don't have the guts to face their own, you know, mistakes or inadequacies or just a goof. You miss something
I blew it all on up to it. Reality is, in fact, when I sent the note to Common Dreams this morning, I added a note, you know, there's an old saying, humble pie is best eaten warm. I should have submitted this last Wednesday, you know, and that's the truth. I should have said so a week ago.
It's still warm.
Although I did. I mean,
it's from your heart, and you got courage, and I'm proud of you. I really am.
Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate kind words.
You know, keep up the good work, and you know, this America of ours, this country, this democracy is worth fighting for.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if sometimes we get off on the wrong track.
Yeah.
But this black days ahead, we got to get our back up. And somebody said something, how do you get backbone into a Democrat?
How's
I'll
that?
Tell you how. You tell him to lift his head up.
There you go. Well said, Robert. Thank you so much. I appreciate hearing from you. Very, and thank you for your kind words. We all need to hear them from time to time, and it's much appreciated. And I would say these are dark days, and in some ways these are very much not dark days. America is still a strong and resilient nation. Half the nation still really clearly gets it, and others were just fooled. So I'm optimistic.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at RJR, unhappy over cuts in benefits, contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentine, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The U.S. Air Force is in rapture over its new baby, which it has named Raptor. We taxpayers, however, can be forgiven if we're less than enraptured by the recent birth of this F-A-22 fighter jet. For it's the most expensive warplane in history, it's not needed, and there are serious doubts about whether it'll even work. The Raptor was conceived 23 years ago in the heat of the Cold War. It was intended to replace the trusty F-15 fighter and was designed to battle a new jet the Soviets were developing. But the Soviet jet never got off the ground, the Soviet Union itself collapsed, the Cold War is long gone, and the enemies we battle today are far different, requiring entirely different weaponry. Indeed, no one threatening the U.S. today has an air force that can even battle the old reliable F-15s. Despite the changed world, however, Lockheed Martin, the maker of Raptor, just kept pushing ahead, using its campaign contributions and lobbying clout to keep Congress feeding our tax dollars into this voracious boondoggle. Lockheed brags that the FA-22 is the most technologically advanced plane ever built, but what it does best is eat money. Each Raptor costs us $258 million, and the Air Force is buying 277 of them. That's nearly four times the price tag originally submitted by Lockheed. Is the company accountable for such a gross cost overrun? No, no, Nanette. Lockheed got a sweetheart deal called a cost-plus contract, which bills all overruns to you and me, not to the corporation. What do we get for our billions? A flawed product. In March, Congress's budget office reported that the Raptor, quote, was not meeting its requirements for a reliable aircraft. Nonetheless, the Air Force is now deploying them. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the day before Lockheed delivered its first Raptor, it announced a 41% jump in its profits.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
So Crane's Detroit Business reports on an analysis of voting machines. Welcome back, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. The examinations of the machines, reports James Lee. Ironically enough, Kenneth Blackwell's spokesman, Secretary of State of Ohio, had actually paid for this study. Almost $200,000. They hired this company called CompuWare to do a study of machines manufactured by Diebold, ES&S, Hart, InterCivic, and Sequoia. And he says this is a real-world study. He says it wasn't just a guy sitting in a computer terminal looking through source code. They set up a booth and walked around it like they were a voter. So here, here's this computer-based voting system just sitting there like it's in a voting booth. And this company has been paid to figure out if they can hack this thing. And they discovered that they could. In fact, they identified, to quote the study, identified several significant security issues which, left unmitigated, would provide an opportunity for an attacker to disrupt the election process or throw the election results into question. One of the easiest of the hacks, Crane's reports CompuWare discovered, was that anyone with access to a supervisor's card could easily access the system and tamper with the results. This was reported on November 1st, the day before Election Day, in Crane's Detroit business. This last week, the 12th, UPI reported, and I quote, computer science professor Avi Rubin of John Hopkins University analyzed Diebold's 47,509 lines of code and found it uses an encryption key that was hacked in 1997 is no longer used in secure programs. Another bug reported by Rubin in the UPI story was that the administrator's PIN code was 1111. And the one programmer had inserted, this is just a hack for now, into the software. The implication, summarized the UPI story, is that by hacking one machine, you have access to all Diebold machines. This is all very encouraging, eh? University of Pennsylvania's Dr. Stephen Freeman, the odds are 1 in 250 million. That the vote actually is what the machine said it was based on the exit polls, or the odds are 1 in 250 million that the exit polls are wrong. Exit polls that we use to certify elections literally all over the planet. So, you know, we shall see. Anyhow, in the meantime, Diebold has given the state of California $2.6 million to stop a lawsuit. Diebold Inc. agreed to pay $2.6 million to settle a lawsuit filed by California alleging that the electronic voting company sold the state and several counties shoddy voting equipment. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer said in a statement, there's no more fundamental right in our democracy than the right to vote and have your vote counted. In making false claims about its equipment, Diebold treated that right and the taxpayers who bought its machines cavalierly. This settlement holds Diebold accountable and helps ensure the future quality and security of its voting systems. Now, why would they do that? Why would Diebold make shoddy machines? Well, because they have to make a profit. Why is it that half the junk you buy falls apart? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to phone in, share your thoughts on issues of the day, our website, tomhartman.com, click on live chat. You can drop into the chat room and participate in some of the most fascinating discussion on the Internet. Sometimes a little strange, sometimes very, very thoughtful, very often thought-provoking. David Cobb and Michael Badnarik, I reported this on Friday. It's worth reporting again. These two guys, Cobb, libertarian, I'm sorry, Green, and Badnarik, libertarian, because they ran for president in Ohio, have the legal standing to sue for a recount. They just have to pay for it. So they're raising money. Badnarik.com and votecobb.org are the websites. David Cobb has been on this program many times. He's an old friend and a brilliant man. A good guy, truly good guy. And here's the joint statement that these two candidates put out. Due to widespread reports of irregularities in the Ohio voting process, we are compelled to demand a recount of the Ohio presidential vote. Voting is the heart of the democratic process in which we as a nation put our faith. When people stand in line for hours to exercise the right to vote, they need to know that all votes will be counted fairly and accurately. We must protect the rights of the people of Ohio, as well as all Americans, and stand up for the right to vote and the right for people's votes to be counted. The integrity of the democratic process is at stake. They're also demanding that Blackwell, the Secretary of State, who is also the head of the Bush for President Committee in Ohio, recuse himself. Back out. Go away. Stop messing with this thing. Let's take a couple of calls here and check the pulse of the country. Richard, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Just a quick question. What is the constitutional requirement for Bush's new cabinet secretary?
There is
confirmation in the Senate and so forth?
The cabinet secretaries are appointed with the advice and consent of the Senate, which is interpreted to mean a majority vote by the Senate. There is no criteria beyond that, to the best of my knowledge. Again, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I do pay attention to these things, and that's my info on it. Thanks for calling, Richard. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Deborah, also in New Mexico. Hey, Deborah, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm really glad that you're highlighting irregularities in the voting, and I think we need to stay on that and keep shining the light on it and get some answers. But in addition to that, I would like to suggest that people who are concerned about democracy in this country do start a letter-writing campaign to the IRS with respect to these churches that have so boldly crossed the line of the 501c3, and particularly the Catholic bishops who were pressing to have Kerry excommunicated because of his stand on Roe v. Wade, et cetera, but also the ones who actually turned over their list of parishioners to the Bush-Cheney campaign. I think, you know, the IRS really should be pressed to revoke their 501c3s.
Deborah, let me be politically incorrect here. First of all, on the latter point, those churches that handed over their parishioner membership roles to the Bush-Cheney campaign, I agree that may well have crossed the line, and that's something that rightfully should endanger their tax-exempt status. But as to us really discouraging churches from participating in political action, it was the Southern Christian Leadership Council and the Reverend Martin Luther King who brought about the fight for civil rights in the United States. It came out of the churches in the South.
It
was Father Berrigan and the nuns and priests who literally put their lives and their bodies at stake to try and shut down the School of the Americas and to end the Vietnam War. It was the churches who led the battle, Protestants primarily, who led the battle in the 19th century for abolition, against slavery. And the churches were very involved in the women's suffrage movement in the early 1900s.
They're very involved in fascism now, especially Dodson with his focus on the family.
But on the other hand, when I do go to church, there is a Unitarian church here in Montpelier that is a really nice place to hang out. There's a couple of churches that Louise and I go to from time to time, and a synagogue, in fact, that we drop in on. But the Unitarians are very politically involved. I spoke at the Unitarian Church in Portland, Oregon, in fact, last month. And, you know, I just think that we, at our peril, we say that those in religion absolutely have no right to speak on what they consider to be matters of conscience, even if they transgress or step over the line into politics. I do think that when it gets into partisan politics, you know, helping one candidate or one party, that is absolute grounds for an instantaneous loss of 501c3 status, of tax-exempt status. But for churches to take what they consider to be moral positions, whether it's a stand against segregation or a stand against gay marriage, I think is an appropriate thing in America.
Well, I think certainly issues, yes, but turning over church assets to a partisan campaign.
Yeah,
is off the charts.
Yeah, as I said, I agree with you, and I think that should be investigated. But I think if we are going to launch a letter writing campaign, or if we're going to, you know, really hold this stuff up high, you know, like for example in Grand Rapids, I kept pointing out these churches that had Bush signs out in front. It has to be the partisan nature of it, not simply the political nature of it, because churches are communities that not just churches, synagogues as well, and presumably mosques as well, are communities that have a strong social conscience and have been the leaders of some of the most popular and powerful progressive movements in the United States, and we forget that at our peril, I think.
Well, I agree with you, and I certainly wouldn't want that to be the case, but they're just a little bit you know, really gloating over being abjectly partisan.
Yeah, well, you know, they're entitled to gloat. It's just if they did something illegal, we need to nail them for it. And they're on that, I am absolutely and totally in agreement with you. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Well, have to forgive me, Tom. I didn't listen to your first hour, so I don't know if you dealt with this rash of cabinet resignations.
I did. Well, only very briefly. I did somewhat.
Okay. Well, if you could indulge me, then I guess I'd just like to ask your opinion of whether this is just normal turnover in the second term, or is there more to it?
No, I think to a large extent it's just normal turnover.
Colin Powell, for instance, I've heard some analyses of. You know, how he had to go before the world and God and everyone else at the UN. And
yeah, we've known for a long time that Powell was upset, that he was humiliated, that he felt like an outsider.
Okay.
We've known that for at least a year, that he wasn't going to stick around. The one of all of these things that concerns me the most, well, two really, Porter Goss to head the CIA. Now he's carrying a partisan agenda into the CIA and purging the quote, liberals in the CIA, trying to get rid of them. And it is really, really causing problems within the CIA to have this partisan hack heading the thing up.
Yep.
First time in my memory that outside of George Herbert Walker Bush being named head of the CIA just either after or before he was head of the RNC, that a partisan hack has been the head of the CIA. But George Herbert Walker Bush, there's considerable evidence, had been in the CIA ever since he was in his 20s. And so, it wasn't a surprise that he was made the director of it.
Yes, Senator Bob Graham supports Gus.
Yeah, well, go figure. I just, it looks to me messy. And the other thing that concerns me is that the president's lawyer, when the president might be prosecuted, or people close to him, Cheney, Scooter, Libby, whatnot, might be prosecuted for outing Valerie Plame's wife, for war crimes, torture crimes, illegally invading Iraq, all kinds, and prosecuted, that the head prosecutor, the attorney general, is now the president's former lawyer. That concerns me. Those are the two things on my radar screen. Thanks for the call, Rick.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
See how they explain the inexplicable. Watch them all debate the undebatable. Apparently alive.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Human rights experts said Friday that American soldiers might have committed a war crime on Thursday when they sent fleeing Iraqi civilians back into Fallujah. Did you get this story? About 1,000 civilians, men, women, and children, families. About 300 of them were fleeing Fallujah. Right, they wanted to get out of the line of fire. They were detained by our soldiers. The women and children were allowed to proceed. The men were tested for residues of explosives and found that none of them had ever had recently handled any. In other words, these were not combatants. They had not fired guns. They hadn't handled explosives. Nonetheless, we sent them back into Fallujah. And this, according to Human Rights Watch, is a war crime. If this happened. However, it may be problematic prosecuting it because the United States has refused to take part in the International Criminal Court, which is, of course, where war crimes are prosecuted. But frankly, I got to say, that's the least of my concerns. Iraq is coming apart at the seams. As we declared the operations in Fallujah accomplished, we also acknowledged that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi and Sheikh Abdullah al-Janabi had escaped, the two top guys. At least 1,000 people died in this thing. 5 heavy explosions rocked central Baghdad after nightfall. There were no immediate explanation for the blast. Sirens were heard coming from the fortified green zone. This is from the AP, just developments in Iraq today. A mortar round whistled overhead the green zone as journalists and others were waiting to accompany Alawi, Prime Minister Alawi, to southern Iraq. Didn't explode, fortunately. His health minister says the evacuation has begun of wounded civilians trapped inside Fallujah. The Red Cross is very upset about this. Car bomb blows up in Mosul, up in the north. This is the city that the Kurds are going to be fighting the Sunnis over. Or there already are. I mean, the civil war has begun. It has begun. Airstrikes and clashes west of Baghdad between U.S. troops and rebels have left 4 people dead, 29 wounded. Mortar rounds hit a residential neighborhood in Samarra, killing 2 people. This, in the last 24 hours, U.S. warplane dropped a 500-pound bomb in Fallujah. Saboteurs attacked an oil pipeline north of Baghdad, sending flames and smoke billowing against the night sky. Insurgents attacked 3 Marine convoys in the western flashpoint city of Ramadi. U.S. forces clashed with insurgents in northern Iraq, killing 1 Iraqi and injuring 10 more, according to a hospital official. This is in Tel Afar, a city 30 miles west of the northern city of Mosul. This must be right up against the edge of the old Kurdistan. Three clerics from an influential Sunni Muslim scholars group were arrested by Iraqi security officials along with 20 of their followers. 70 U.S. soldiers were flown to a military hospital in Ramstein, Germany, as a result of the Fallujah battle. France is still hoping the two of their journalists held hostage are alive, but they've lost contact with the kidnappers. And insurgents armed with grenades attacked the Romanian army convoy in Iraq. Romania's defense minister said no casualties are reported. Romania has 730 troops in Iraq. The news of the day. Greg in California on the line. Hey, Greg, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi. You've spoken to my friend Ellen in the past, and she runs votersunite.org. They've got a fantastic summary of all the different election problems sorted by date, state, and problem type. So your listeners who are looking for a summary of what we've seen reported in the media, that's a great resource, votersunite.org.
Okay.
What I called about is that out on DU over the weekend, Bev Harris informed the community that she and Jim March are going to refuse the settlement with Diebold and that they're going to drag him into discovery.
No, that should be interesting. That should be very interesting. Thanks for the tip. Thanks for the tip on that, Greg. That, basically, there's this lawsuit going on between Diebold and Black Box Voting about, you know, Bev was floating around the internet and she found their FTP site open and went in and discovered like the Rob Georgia file and whatnot. And there's all this legal stuff going on around it. So fascinating. Thanks for the call, Greg. I appreciate it. And votersunite.org. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at RJR are unhappy over cuts in benefits contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentin, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast, with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call.
You will recall around 2002, in the winter of 2002-2003, right after the resolution was voted on to allow the president to use force to force Iraq to comply with the UN resolutions, that being the October surprise of 2002 to help Republicans in the House and Senate, that a record number of people around the world took to the streets, including in the United States, numbers that had never, ever before been seen for any issue whatsoever. And they were saying, and people were, the one out of 100 anti-war persons that were allowed onto network television were saying things like, if we go to Iraq, you're going to face house-to-house combat. It's going to be messy. The people are going to say, hey, wait a minute, we went through this before 1,000 years ago with the Crusades. We're not going to go through it again. You're going to have a rise of nationalism. They're going to try and throw us out. You're going to see this country, which really should be three countries and at various times has been, splintered back up into its Shia, Sunni, and Kurdish factions, and civil war may well break out. And it's going to be a mess. And right now we have Saddam in a box. He's not engaging in slaughter. He does run some pretty ferocious prisons, but they do in Saudi Arabia as well. And Jordan and Egypt and on and on. And we know what he has. We've got the UN inspectors in there. Let's just sit on it. And if these folks want democracy, they can steal it. They can get it themselves. They can, as pretty much every other country in the world has done. In Romania, they murdered the evil dictator Ceausescu. In Bulgaria, over and over and over again, people just rose up and said, no, it has happened. Repeatedly. But no, the neocons said, we can bring democracy at the end of a rifle barrel. And if we can convince enough American voters that these folks in Iraq had something to do with 9/11, or that they represent a threat to America, we can sell it. We can make it happen. And sure enough, they did. And now, we reap the wind. Or sow the wind, we are reaping the whirlwind. 1-866-889-8894. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's on your mind?
I know the topic has really switched around to Iraq, but I keep thinking about the source of the problem, which is the takeover of the government by one party. And when I hear
the takeover of our government, you mean?
Yeah, our government. When I see Frist talking about, publicly just saying he wants to get rid of the filibuster or lower the level required for a filibuster, doesn't he get it that eventually they're going to be out of power and that's, the rules are there for a reason to protect one party from dominating,
Yeah, it could be, Glenn, and it could be, and hopefully it is. But, what I think is going on here is that these guys think that single-party rule has arrived. It's really becoming increasingly evident to me that the thinking among the leadership of the Republican Party is essentially Stalinist in its perspective. You can have the appearance of opposition. In fact, that's a desirable thing because it lends legitimacy to those in power. But you do not tolerate opposition. You know, as Bush said, he's glad to reach across the aisle and work with Democrats as long as they do it on his terms. And so that's why I think that they are willing to say we don't want audit trails on voting machines. We want to gerrymander, and we're going to fight for the right to do it. You know, like DeLay did in Texas, and that we're going to try and change the Senate rules so that you can't filibuster with 60 votes. It's going to take, you know, 67 to rechange the rules back, and that's my take on that. And I know it sounds grim, and maybe even paranoid, but I can't come to any other conclusion based on it. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, what's in the news today?
Well, obviously, the various resignations from President Bush's cabinet are big news in Washington, D.C., as everybody's jumping around anyway, trying to figure out what they're going to do next. Colin Powell, Secretary of State, is the big news, and rumors, of course, immediately, there were rumors even before he resigned, that Condoleezza Rice, National Security Advisor, will be President Bush's main pick to succeed him. Then, of course, we've got Education Secretary Rob Page, Energy Secretary Abram, and Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman all going. And I'm sure we'll hear more, but I think they're going to stagger it. So people are working out what that means. And meantime, I was on Capitol Hill today. Things are getting ready for Congress to come back tomorrow and to start dealing with the appropriations bills that they've got to handle. I attended this morning, along with Ellen, the freshman orientation, at least part of it, where the freshman congressmen, not the senators, they do something much more rarefied. They have lectures and they attend and they find out how to use the franking machine and what they can fire somebody for and what they're liable for. And we talk to them about how to use the media. And it's a week-long orientation and they're working like mad.
Yeah, not that there's that many. And 99% of all incumbents got reelected this time.
Yes, the room wasn't full.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All righty. Anything else happening in Washington we need to know about?
No, I would say those are the main things. How they're going to deal with the 13 bills relating to the budget that they have to pass. They've only passed four so far. They've got to pass nine. How they're going to get that done and whether they are going to be able to address intelligence reform during the lame duck session or whether that's going to wait because they won't be able to get to it until the beginning of the next session. That's really what people are focused on this week.
There's been no discussion about Porter-Goss purging the CIA of liberals.
Well, there's a little bit of talk about it, but it tends to be fairly underground talk because people are terrified at this point of who might be listening to them, you know. There's a feeling that the CIA is becoming a political agency, that it will be used for political purposes. This is a feeling of some.
Yeah.
Others are very happy about this. And also very much that Porter-Goss has brought in people with him, even though he may have a history with the agency, people with him who have ridden roughshod over long-time operatives, long-time experienced people, and that they could have done this job, some of which certainly needed to be done, much better and with more tact.
Yeah, you know, this was one of the very first things that Hitler did when he gained power in Germany, was he politicized the intelligence apparatus. He consolidated it all under one umbrella, first of all, the Central Office for State Security, much like the Homeland Security Department, put his political buddy in charge of it, and then began a purge. And you know, it's spooky to see this happen.
Very spooky stuff.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Victoria.
Appreciate
it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Our report from Washington, D.C., from Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. The world's richest beaver dam has been discovered. A little levity for the day. Yes, the world's richest beaver dam. The beavers did it. Is the slogan. It turns out that the Lucky Dollar Casino in Greensburg, Louisiana, got robbed. About $75,000 in dollar bills was taken from you know, dollar slot machines. And the bandits had apparently stashed this stuff in the woods. And some beavers were busy building a dam, and they thought, hey, this stuff would work really good to fill in the holes between the twigs. So and in fact, it wasn't until they started to drain the beaver dam that they discovered that the beaver house, you know, that the dam partially covers, was all clotted up with dollar bills. The casino people were elated to get the money back, according to the local sheriff, St. Helena Parish Sheriff's deputies. And it looks like they've caught the bad guys. But the Beavers have lost their money. One wonders if they were offered anything to make up for the caulking that they lost in this process. On a little more serious note, the U.S., this in the Times Online, this the Times of London, published an article today, well, yesterday actually, U.S. accused of torture flights. And this is sobering stuff. Now, we have our intelligence agencies being politicized. The Fuhrer, President's personal attorney being put in charge of the investigative and police agencies, the Justice Department. And now we'll hear the story from Stephen Gray. An executive jet is being used by the American intelligence agencies to fly terrorist suspects to countries that routinely use torture in their prisons. The movements of the Gulfstream 5, leased by agents from the United States Defense Department and the CIA, are detailed in confidential logs obtained by the Sunday Times, which cover more than 300 flights. We've apparently been delivering prisoners to Egypt, Syria, and Uzbekistan. Now, what's significant about that? Here, for example, its prisoner transfer missions were first reported in May by the Swedish television program Cold Facts. It described how American agents had arrived in Stockholm in the Gulf Stream in December 2001 to take two suspected terrorists from Sweden to Egypt. Witnesses described seeing the prisoners handed to U.S. agents, and the U.S. agents' faces were masked by hoods. The clothes of the handcuffed prisoners were cut off, and they were dressed in nappies, you know, jumpsuits, covered by orange coveralls, or sweaters, covered by orange coveralls before being forcibly given sedatives by suppository. The Gulfstream flew them to Egypt, where both prisoners claimed they were beaten and tortured with electric shocks to their genitals. The mother of one of these two people who was taken from Sweden says his mattress had electricity. When they connected to the electricity, his body would rise up and then fall down, and this up and down would go on until they unplugged the electricity. A month before the Swedish extradition, the same Gulfstream was identified by Masmood Anwar, a Pakistani newspaper reporter in Karachi. Airport staff told Anwar they had seen Jamil Gassim, a Yemeni student who is suspected of links to Al-Qaeda, being bundled aboard by a group of white men wearing masks. They took him to Jordan, where he has now disappeared. This is Bob Baer, a former CIA operative in the Middle East, said, if you want a serious interrogation, you send a prisoner to Jordan. If you want them tortured, you send them to Syria. If you want someone to disappear, you send them to Egypt. Among the countries where prisoners have been sent by America is Uzbekistan, a close ally and dictatorship whose secret police are notorious for their interrogation methods, including the alleged boiling of prisoners alive. The Gulfstream made at least 7 trips to the Uzbek capital. CIA declined to discuss the issue. Are you concerned? I am. I am starting to my level of concern started ratcheting it up significantly after 9/11, and is continues to increase about the rise of authoritarianism and totalitarianism, and the dismissal of legitimate democracy and debate in this country. It truly concerns me. And the rule of law, just the idea of the rule of law. I mean, here you have the president who says we should have the rule of law, and he wants to make sure that judges don't misinterpret his rulings. The rule of law is legislative ruling. Excuse me. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Larry in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was just talking to Rama about this torture flight article when you brought it up. You know, just when I think the mud can't get any darker, I come across something like that, and I didn't know whether to throw up or cry when I read it, because I'm having a hard time sometimes differentiating some of these people who claim to do things in our name and the people who are on TV en masse cutting off people's heads.
Yeah. It's important that we keep that distinction in mind, though. I mean, there really are Zarqawi and these guys who are cutting people's heads off in Iraq really and truly are terrible, evil, awful people who, no matter what they claim for justification, have gone over the edge. On the other hand, for us to be participating in torture is, first of all, it's nuts. Anybody who's ever worked in intelligence can tell you that when you torture people, you don't get accurate information. It's the worst way to get accurate information, the least effective way. And secondly, it's a violation of international law. It's a violation of the standards. It coarsens all of us. It makes all of us a little less human, I think, and that's a terrible thing to be happening in a nation that was founded on such high ideals.
Right. I went back and reviewed Romero recently. I don't know if you remember that movie about Archbishop Romero.
I never saw it.
And he was assassinated by the right wing, who was receiving a lot of our support from this country. And Romero had pleaded with our government to stop sending arms to be used against his people. But one of the things that he said in there was that no one in the military or outside is obligated to obey a moral law. So, you know, I do have some problems with these guys. You know, they don't have to be doing this, and I guess I'm losing the ability to understand why.
Yeah, and let's also, again, once again, be careful to differentiate between the military who are following orders and the civilian leadership who define what the military's mission is. I lay this squarely at the feet of George W. Bush, Alberto Gonzalez, Dick Cheney, that bunch. I mean, it's right there.
Well, I intend to contact my congressman on this and shake the trees. He's a pretty partisan guy, but I'm going to see. But thanks. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah.
Good one, Larry, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And these are issues that really do need to be raised. This and the politicization, if that's the correct word, of the CIA here. Now, Porter Goss, the White House has ordered the new CIA director, Porter Goss, to purge the agencies of officers believed to have been disloyal to George W. Bush. Purge the CIA of people disloyal to a politician? Not in my America. I'm sorry. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In the presidential elections, nearly 90% of African Americans cast their vote for Senator John Kerry. But with President Bush back in the White House, African Americans are looking to the local level to push for change. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
Both presidential campaigns focused on the war in Iraq, terrorism, and keeping America safe. Many in the black community adamantly oppose the occupation of Iraq. They say it's a war based on lies and profiteering. African-American opposition to the war is also strong because it disproportionately affects minorities, as most enlistees are low-income people of color.
A Republican Party who diametrically opposes everything New York families are all about.
New York City Council member Charles Barron, whose motto is that all politics are local, stresses that unemployment is rising, the Section 8 housing program is shrinking, and school funding continues to go unfulfilled. 50% of black males are unemployed in New York City. Councilmember Barron says that the policy of shrinking government shrinks employment, as 60% of black and Latino work in the public sector.
You got to listen to these code words, that we're going to shrink government. We're going to make sure that we privatize more of the public sector, even things like the faith-based initiatives that is taken away from social institutions that the government provided and given it to these private religious groups.
A major program that President Bush will push in his next 4 years is the privatization of Social Security. This would have a doubly negative impact on the black communities who aren't large contributors to the stock market. And with unemployment rates so high, many don't have money to set aside for 30 years down the road. Leaders in the black community say they'll continue voter registration drives and push to get more people of color elected to public office in the next 4 years. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You know, it's just amazing. Sometimes you look at this stuff, you know, torture flights and you know, presidential crimes and cover-ups and Dick Cheney and the administration ignoring the threat of Bin Laden until 9/11 and on and on. And you go, you know, things are really going to hell in a handbasket. Patriot Act, and then you step back and you take a look at the larger picture. This country has been through so much, and so much worse than right now, frankly, and has made it through. As long as people of good conscience, as long as people who hold to the ideals of this country are still alive and kicking and passing the information on to the next generation, I think we have a tremendous future. A tremendous future. And that this country once again can become the beacon of liberty to the world that it was, by and large, up until Herr Bush became Führer. That's disrespectful, isn't it? Before Mr. Bush became president. Well, you know, I'm not going to engage in Michael Wienerisms. I'm sorry. Michael Savage's real name is Michael Wiener, and it's a... Is that another one? I guess it was. Adam in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Adam, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I am calling to talk about this movie that my roommate exposed to me. He's a huge Bush supporter, and so needless to say, we have somewhat of a conflict living with one another. So So he shows me this movie called Fahrenheit 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about Michael Moore and what was real and what wasn't, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And I found it all pretty entertaining for the most part and funny on other parts. But what I was really able to do, and what I'd really like to say thank you to you specifically for, sir, is exposing so many specifics that go on in this country that I think so many people just kind of put a broad brushstroke across what's going on.
Yeah.
And he's one of those people. And after him and I sat down and we really discussed a lot of things last night that we haven't been able to really talk about until now because of the election and controversy, et cetera, et cetera. He's really been able to really look at this government and really understand, like, what Thomas Jefferson, the reason why he did things and what he said and the structure of the country back then for the benefit of all people.
That's great, Adam. I'm really pleased to hear that you've been able to recalibrate your roommate and that I played some role in it. Thank you. And that's very encouraging. I would also, you know, direct people, if you go to tomhartman.com, click on Articles on Democracy, you'll find a long collection of things that I've written on these topics. But, Adam, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. It's very kind of you to share that. This is the important thing. Rather than building walls, we need to be opening dialogues. We need to be sharing the word. Tag, you're it. Now pass it along.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at RJR are unhappy over cuts in benefits contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentin, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The wails of despair from progressive friends began pouring through my telephone very early on November 3rd. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We'll have to move to Canada. I can't take another 4 years. It's so much to bear. I give up. Get a grip. Yes, the Bushites are back, and yes, it's going to be a miserable 4 years of grueling battles as they push their agenda of more war, more right-wing appointments to the courts, more giveaways to corporate power, more pollution, more cuts in public services, more assaults on Social Security, more secrecy, more shredding of our liberties, more, well, more Bush. But give up? Give up the fight for our essential American values, the values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all? Surrender our nation's historic possibilities to these ideological zealots and corporate frontmen? Not a chance. What are we going to do? Fight back, that's what. First, recognize that we're fighting from strength and are tantalizingly close to winning. 49% of voters not only were with us in this election, but strongly with us, including more than 60% of young voters. Our grassroots organizing this time was stupendous, giving us new expertise, tools, and outreach to keep advancing. And you can count on the Bushites to give this year's non-voters and wary Bush voters more and more reasons to get active with us. Second, recognize that fighting for democracy is always a long-haul proposition. It took decades for America's founders to build enough public support to break with England. Likewise, the abolitionists, suffragists, populists, labor, civil rights, and other movements didn't achieve their historic successes on their first outing, and it'll require the same perseverance on our part. This is Jim Hightower saying, we've just begun to lift our country up. As Willie Nelson says, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
welcome back, my friends. Last week, I believe it was, Thursday. Could have been Friday, but I think it was Thursday. Somebody had called during this hour and asked the question, what would happen if we could no longer sell our debt? And in fact, had raised the question that, as I recall, it was a woman who had called who had said that she thought that there had actually been a debt, a treasury sale. Our debt, of course, our IOUs are referred to as treasury bills and treasury bonds, or sometimes generically as treasuries, and that there had been an attempt to sell them which had gone awry. And I said, you know, gee, if that had happened, it would have been big news, and I missed it somehow. Well, it turns out there was an article here on the 14th, and this weekend, in the Los Angeles Times, raising just exactly this issue. This by David Streitfeld. And he says, during the routine sale of U.S. Treasury bonds in early September, one of the essential pillars holding up the economy suddenly disappeared. Foreigners had been regularly buying nearly half of all debt issued by the U.S. government. On September 9th, for the first time that anyone could remember, they stayed home. Now, this, I have to tell you, this is a terror scenario for not only the United States, but also for the Bush administration. George W. has run us massively in debt. You know, one of the comments that Cheney made very early on in the Bush administration when the issue was raised about, you know, your policies of tax cuts during times of war and blah-de-blah and recession, this is going to create a massive deficit. And Cheney said, Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. I believe it was Cheney, one of them. I'm pretty sure it was Cheney. He said, Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. And that's been sort of that has been the mantra of this administration, borrow and spend. Borrow from our grandchildren and spend. And or borrow in the names of our grandchildren, but borrow from China and Japan and spend. And, you know, Reagan was the first president. In his first 2 years in office, Reagan borrowed more money than all other American presidents in history combined to create a good time, feel good sense in the economy. I mean, you give me a $1 million credit card and I can show you what it looks like to have the appearance of living high, right? And that's what Reagan did. And it got him reelected. And you know, and then Clinton said, no, we got to go back to fiscal sanity. And he reversed that. And he actually generated the first surplus in history by actually raising taxes and cutting spending. He did both. Clinton did, oddly enough. And so now here comes George W. And in his 4 years, he has cut taxes and he has dramatically raised spending. And not just in the military. I mean, all over the place. And particularly in areas that would hand money to his corporate buddies, you know, this Medicare deal and all this stuff. And in order to pay for this, he's had to borrow. We're now $7 trillion in debt. Remember, before Reagan came into office, the United States had never even had a debt of $1 trillion. It was less than $1 trillion when Reagan came into office. Reagan was the first president to push it over a trillion. When he was done, in fact, it was over $2 trillion. Clinton pushed it down. Now Bush has got it up over $7 trillion. A trillion is $1,000 billion or $1 million million. And the only way that we can sustain this, the only way we can keep alive, keep breathing, is if foreign countries will loan us money so that we can continue to pay our bills. And the way that they loan us money is by buying our treasury debts. Well, here back to this story from the Los Angeles Times. Foreigners have been regularly buying nearly half of all debt issued by the U.S. government. The other half has been purchased by wealthy people in the United States because it's a great investment. You don't have to pay income taxes on it. On September 9th, federal income tax, on September 9th, for the first time that anyone could remember, they stayed home. Saikichi Robbins, head of global fixed income trading at Bank Julius Baer, said thoughts of panic flickered out there. The foreigners returned in force at the next Treasury auction in September 9 was quickly dismissed as an aberration. But the episode demonstrated how much the U.S. economy is dependent on other countries to bankroll its free spending ways. That fragility is becoming more precarious because of recent declines in the U.S. dollar to multi-year lows, some economists say. Now, here's the problem. When you're, when, you know, if you as a family were living on your credit cards and had gone, say, $100,000 in debt on a dozen different credit cards. And then you went to the bank and you said, you know, I'd like to borrow against my assets. And the bank might say, you know, we don't think your assets are worth much because you're so deeply in debt. Well, the rest of the world is now looking at the United States and saying, we're not sure your dollar is worth much, which represents the wealth of your nation, because you're so badly in debt. And if the dollar is going to continue to fall, the value of the dollar, which has dropped about 20% since George W. became president against the euro, if the dollar is going to continue to fall, we'll put our money in other things. We're not going to buy your debt anymore. I mean, who wants to buy IOUs denominated in $10,000 or $100,000 portions and have them be paid back with dollars that are worth less? So we give you $10,000 now, and even though we get back $110,000, it's really only worth $90,000 because of inflation, because the dollar has been reduced in value. And the only response that we have to that is, well, we'll give you more money then in interest, which Greenspan just did last week, raising the prime. Please take our debt. We'll give you more interest if you take our debt. The cheaper dollar reduces, this Los Angeles Times, reduces the value of American securities, making them less attractive to foreign investors. That could eventually precipitate what Robbins called the doomsday scenario. And Japan and China not only refusing to buy U.S. bonds, but selling some of their $1.3 trillion in reserves. Sometime soon, said Harry Chernoff, an economist with Pathfinder Capital Investors, the falling dollar is going to show up in rising inflation, rising interest rates, and a falling standard of living. See, what happens is when the interest rates go up and the value of the dollar goes down, you and I become poorer. The only people who benefit from this are investors. Working people get hurt. They take the hit when there's inflation. He adds, the housing and mortgage markets, which benefit the most from declining interest rates over the past few years, are likely to feel the most pain. You're going to see the housing bubble burst. Again, the Los Angeles Times. If the dollar falls too far too quickly, they say, these all-important foreign investors will abandon the U.S. in favor of stabler places. Indeed, there are signs that such an exodus may have already started. In August, the most recent period for which there's data, foreign private investors sold $2 billion more in U.S. stocks than they bought, the Treasury said. Meanwhile, they dumped $4 billion more in government bonds than they purchased. C. Fred Bergston, author of Dollar Overvaluation in the World Economy and director of the Institute of International Economics, a Washington think tank, said, a run for the exits could happen any day, that's for sure. Ultimately, these economists say, notes the Los Angeles Times, the solution is for the U.S. government to reduce its massive budget deficit. In other words, to stop buying more junk from China than we sell to the world. In other words, to reestablish our manufacturing base here and start selling things to the world instead of just buying things from the world. This would mean turning our back on economic trade policy, on conservative trade policy, on conservative economic policy, on conservative fiscal policy. It would mean going back to the policies that made this country great. Rational, liberal economic policies that say you pay as you go, you defend the American workforce, you defend American industry, you set the rules of the game so that small businesses can emerge and they can actually compete against large businesses. And you don't hand the reins of government over exclusively to a small handful of very large corporations. John Snow, for example, our former Treasury Secretary, well, I think he still is, if he hasn't resigned yet, probably will, former chairman of the Business Roundtable. This is a group of the 100 largest CEOs, the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations in America, running our Treasury policy. They go on to say that would curb the need for Uncle Sam to issue so many Treasury notes, and the dollar would rise on its own because the deficit, the trade deficit, is the main reason it continues to fall. All this stuff is interrelated. According to the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, it's not Democrats, not Republicans, it's just bureaucrats, by 2008, nearly 10% of our budget will be devoted to interest payments, which means that we'll have less and less latitude, we'll have less and less money available for the things that we really need. By 2008, we're going to be beginning to pay off the debt on the loans that George Bush took out over the last 3.5 years, the last 4 years, to try and make the economy look good so he could get himself reelected. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff in Denver has been patiently waiting on the phone. Hey, Jeff, thanks for waiting through that rant. What's up?
Well, first, to comment on what you just said before I get to what I called about. Few people realize the U.S. Fiscal policy is so bad that if we were a European country, we would not be allowed to join the EU.
Right, because our debt ratios. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, the earlier thing you said about our dark situation and the hope for getting out of this, I think we should really remind people that we actually have the biggest.
Let me just say, Jeff, you know, people tune in at various times, and this is the way I closed out the last hour was by pointing out that no matter how bad and how dark things sometimes look, you know, with these torture flights that have now been exposed, the evisceration of the Patriot Act, you know, the evisceration of our rights, just this whole concatenation of things, that I still have great hope that this is an incredibly resilient country, that about half of Americans got it and get it and continue to get it, certainly in terms of electoral politics. I think probably far more than, and if you look on an issue-by-issue basis, far more than half of Americans believe the same things that we talk about in this program, believe that health care is a right, that we should have national health care, believe that we should be paying as we go, we should be paying our bills, believe that human rights are important and should be followed and so on, and that I'm actually very hopeful about the United States. That was my point. So now you wanted to comment on that. Thank you.
Yeah, we actually have the biggest movement in history at its beginning. We have 55 million Americans on our side. We have 3/4 of the population of the world on our side. And Bush has come into power in this term, probably one of the weakest presidents ever. His approval rating is only about 45% with most polls.
Yep.
And we have a communication system we've never had before. The grassroots movement is actually a very mature lawn right now. There are people now that are more active than they were before this so-called election.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're working their buns off every day. Remember, I would like to remind people that 1972 when Nixon got in, we saw it was really a dark time. Well, Nixon didn't finish his term, and he resigned on his own.
Right, although that was in part, though, because Democrats controlled the Senate and they could investigate him. That's why it's so important to be working on the 2006 elections right now.
Yes, but the people are running things now. I mean, doing the investigation, and a lot of stuff is going to be revealed here. But yeah. Bush just has, I mean, his fiscal policy is everything. The nail is already in the coffin.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, Jeff. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's hope you're absolutely right. I believe you're right, too. I agree with you. And I appreciate your eternal optimism, because it is what has allowed this country to survive all these years. Here we are. We will stay here. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In My Man Without a Country, says author Kurt Vonnegut, for more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Iraq's farmers are not happy, as they say. We have changed their laws so that it is now illegal for Iraqi farmers to save seeds. 97% of Iraqi farmers use saved seeds from their own stocks from last year's harvest. Iraq typically feeds itself. And now we've changed their laws so that they can no longer save seeds. They have to buy them from the big American seed companies. This is according to a new report by Grain and Focus on Global South. New legislation in Iraq has been carefully put in place by the U.S. that prevents farmers from saving their seeds and effectively hands the seed market to transnational corporations. This is a disastrous turn of events for Iraqi farmers, they note, biodiversity, and the country's food security. The new law in question heralds the entry into Iraqi law of patents on life forms, this one affecting plants and seeds. This law fits in neatly into the U.S. vision of Iraqi agriculture in the future, that of an industrial agricultural system dependent on large corporations providing inputs in and seeds. This is mind-boggling. I mean, just absolutely mind-boggling. And on it goes. I mean, you know, the corporatization of America rapidly becoming the corporatization of the world. And we wonder why the folks in Iraq are a little upset with us. Why might they not like us there? We've banned labor unions. Alawi has now banned opposition media. Well, we did that to some extent some time ago. There's discussion now that Sadr, you know, the young Muslim cleric, the Shia cleric in the south, keep in mind the Shia are 60% of Iraq, that Sadr might be cooking up a deal with Ahmed Chalabi, who it turns out was probably a secret agent for Iran all that time that he was cozying up to Dick Cheney and Doug Feith in the Office of Special Plans in helping hatch the Iraq War, so that we did Iran's dirty work for them. Iran didn't want Saddam. They fought a war against him. They lost almost 1 million people in that war against Saddam. Fought to a draw. So they get Chalabi in there. We break Saddam's code, give it to Chalabi. Chalabi gives that to the Iranians. This is all well documented. So here's Chalabi. He's a secret agent of Iran. The Iranians and the mullahs in Iran, by the way, are Shiites. And now we've got Sadr the Shiite. I mean, you know, we have been had. We have been had. These guys in the White House, you know, this so-called conservative Republican administration, they've been had. And we played right into the hands of the Iranians. And now we're the ones, you know, sacrificing the blood and the money instead of the Iranians. And when it's all done, they'll hold an election, and guess who's going to run it? It's going to be Chalabi and Sadr and the Shiites, and you're going to be back to the burqas, and Iran and Iraq will be united, just like Iran wanted, just like they fought a war for almost a decade to have happen. We did it for them. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Keith in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Keith, what's on your mind?
Well, I had just been waiting in the doctor's office for my wife, and I came across an old issue of Newsweek, and there was an interesting column there where a guy was kind of along the lines of your What Would Jefferson Do, but he interviewed a historian who had just written a biography of Washington,
mm-hmm.
and he asked him a few questions, and the guy answered. And one of the things he asked him was, you know, about Iraq, and he went into this explanation of Washington. Basically, what he did was he realized at a certain point that he didn't have to win every battle. He just had to not lose.
That's right, lose the war. And in fact, Washington also farewell address, made a lengthy speech warning us about foreign entanglements in foreign wars. George Washington would be horrified by what's going on in Iraq right now. Keith, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. Good point. You know, Jefferson isn't the only one who would be looking at that. I would say the majority of the founders right now, with the possible exception of John Adams, who so wanted war with France in order to help himself get reelected, would be spinning in their graves.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
U.S. Airways asked a bankruptcy court on Friday to throw out contracts covering service workers, flight attendants, and mechanics. The airline would like to eliminate its current pension plans and reduce or terminate health care coverage for retirees. United Airlines made similar requests on November 4th. In both cases, the federal government's pension insurance program will pick up part of the tab on the pensions thrown out. The Flight Attendants Union has called the request an attempt at intimidation.
A union organizing effort at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company is in its early stages, and the company has made its anti-union attitude clear, saying it doesn't think that bringing in a so-called third party would be constructive. Workers at RJR are unhappy over cuts in benefits contacted the Machinists Union, but it may be a long road from here to unionization. RJR workers say they have to suffer cuts while company executives enjoy big salaries, bonuses, and company stock. Management at RJR has met with workers about the union issue. There are about 1,600 manufacturing workers at the RJR plant in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. RJR has fought off union organizing efforts before and is now the only big tobacco company to be non-union. For a brief period between 1943 and 1951, there was a union at RJR, but not since then. The machinists have scheduled an informational meeting this week for RJR workers interested in joining the union. North Carolina is a so-called right-to-work state that doesn't require workers at a unionized company to join the union, and that makes organizing and maintaining unions more difficult there.
The New York State United Teachers Union helped win consumers $29 million in a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline. The teachers union became involved in the suit when it was learned that the drug company was overcharging for the drug Augmentine, a drug commonly used to fight ear and strep infections. GlaxoSmithKline held a monopoly on the drug, but the suit will now guarantee a generic version will be made available to the public. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although the rate of violent and property crime has been falling in the United States, the number of inmates in state and federal prisons has risen by more than 2%. At the end of 2003, there were 1,470,000 men and women in prison. If juvenile offenders are included, that number jumps to more than 2,200,000. The number of women in prison has been growing fast with a sharp rise of nearly 4%, but they only make up 7% of the total population.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. The release of two reports this last, just in the last week, two reports now coming out saying, global warming is real. In fact, the Earth's climate has warmed by about 1 degree since 1900, but in the Arctic, where you see an amplified effect, 4 to 7 degrees over just the last 50 years. This is two different studies. That warmth has reduced the amount of snow that falls every winter, melted mountain glaciers, and shrunk the Arctic Ocean's summer sea ice cover, satellite measurements show. This is from a story by Matt Crenson in the Chicago Sun-Times. The effects of climate change have been more subtle in the mainland United States, but spring arrives 2 weeks earlier than it did 50 years ago. Now, you know, for those of us, like yours truly here, living in the People's Republic of Vermont, I'm not sure what our altitude is here, but we're here in the Green Mountains. Spring arriving earlier would seem like a good thing. The problem is that you have birds that time their flight cycles north and south to phases of the moon and the sun, you know, to astronomical things. But you have caterpillars that hatch based on temperature. And so now we're seeing this problem in the northern climates where for thousands and thousands of years, the caterpillar hatch and the bird feast, birds arriving and eating, coincided. I mean, you know, this was the product of thousands of years of evolutionary, you know, a symbiotic process, that they no longer correspond. And so you're getting too many caterpillars but by the time the birds show up, they've already turned into cocoons, or the caterpillars are hatching too late, the birds show up too early. Depending on the situation, depending on the place, the birds, the caterpillars, the bottom line is that these very, very delicate mechanisms are being disturbed, and it's not just about whether we humans can, take off our winter coats just a little bit earlier. By the way, I mentioned nappies in the last hour. Nappies is British for diapers. So, enough of that. Anyhow. And in fact, Camille Parmesan, a biologist at the University of Texas in Austin, who is the co-author of one of these two studies, says response to climate change are being seen across the USA now. So, you know, strange things. The Bush administration has argued not enough is known about climate change or global warming to justify major efforts at forestalling or preventing future warming. Right. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to phone in. Our website, tomhartman.com, you can drop into our live chat room there. A couple of interesting things here that I want to get into. Apparently, some of the folks who helped Bush get elected are not at all happy with him. Or at least they're not at all happy with Cheney, which highlights my prediction that Dick Cheney will not serve out the 4 years of his vice presidency, not for any disastrous reason, but that some excuse will be found to remove him, probably a health excuse, so that the Republican candidate for president for 2008 can be set up well in advance by being vice president. That's my prediction. And we'll see how... In my nightmares, it's Jeb Bush. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Let's go to the telephones. Chris from Albuquerque, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I heard a rumor this morning that I was wondering if you had any thoughts on, and that was that Paul Wolfowitz was going to be with Condoleezza Rice moving over probably to state, that Paul Wolfowitz was going to be the new national security advisor.
It wouldn't surprise me. It's going to be really interesting to see what roles the neocons play in this new administration, because we have not had a conservative, nor have we had essentially a Republican administration in terms, at least, of our foreign policy. In terms of our domestic policy, it has been neither Republican nor conservative. It's been radical corporatist. It's been essentially fascistic in the Mussolini sense of corporations running government or participating with government. That's with domestic financial policy. Well, with regard to our international policy, it's been neocon. It's been Straussian.
I guess the reason I was calling is because you know a heck of a lot about this Wolfowitz guy, and I haven't been able to find much out. And I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about this guy so that, you know, we'd have some understanding.
He's part of the neocon bunch. I mean, I don't have his bio right in front of me or any, you know, quick facts about him, but he's part of this group with Doug Feith and Dick Cheney and Jeb Bush and there's a bunch of others there that back in 1998 helped create the Project for a New American Century. They are disciples of Leo Strauss. Strauss argued that it's not only acceptable but even a good thing to lie in politics in order to achieve power if you use the power for the greater good, and that it is possible to force democracy on people. And their basic foreign policy idea was that if they took over and they're grounded, by the way, in libertarian economic ideals, Ayn Rand, objectivist economic ideals. And their idea was if they could take over Iraq and turn it into a utopian state, the libertarians are utopianists, basically, you know, they're much like the communists were. They believe, you know, if only everybody just lived this way, we'd have a perfect nation, right? And therefore, we will force it on people. And so they took over Iraq and they imposed this flat tax of 15%, which is one of the libertarian dreams. Get rid of progressive taxation. They eliminated all boundaries and borders with regard to the action of corporations. So corporations can freely come in and go out. They don't have to be citizens of the state. They don't have to have partners in the state. They can do business. They can expatriate or remove from the country 100% of all of their profits. They can basically strip mine Iraq in terms of its raw materials, its goods, and its labor. And they can just drag into Iraq all kinds of cheap foreign goods. And they said, you know, there'll be a period of shock, but eventually it'll be the new paradise, and this will be the new model for the world, because they've been trying to do this in the United States ever since the Gilded Age, and they, you know, every time they try it, it creates a disaster here. So they're going to try it someplace else, and that's Iraq.
There is one last question. If you could mention this, what exactly is the power of the National Security Advisor. I don't understand. They don't seem to run anything.
No, the National Security, my understanding is that the National Security Advisor's role is to act as a liaison to a large extent between all the various different security agencies and the president. You know, about 80% of our security agencies fall under the aegis of the Department of Defense. And then there's the CIA, there's the NSA, and there's a bunch of them that aren't specifically under defense.
So how does this differ from this thing they're talking about with the National Intelligence Advisor?
Well, that's the National Intelligence Czar. They're talking about consolidating that all in one place, and that's not going to happen because the Pentagon's not going to let go of the reins.
Oh.
It just ain't going to happen. You know,
okay.
it's DOA, dead on arrival.
Okay.
But, you know, good question. Thanks for the call, Christopher. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Chris, just to remind you, our NLP and activism program begins tomorrow at 1 p.m. We're going to have an on-the-air training in neurolinguistic programming and activism, how to more effectively communicate, not just in politics, in personal relationships and in business as well. This stuff just applies right across the board. And we're going to be doing this for about a six-month period here. We're going to do a course, an actual NLP course, so just to give you a heads up. Chris in Taos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I sure enjoy your program. It's a little hard to get up here. But I'd like to say what made America great was cheap gas and the right to be stupid whenever and whenever we want to.
Well, that's not what made America great. That's what set us up for the situation we find ourselves in today.
Well, it certainly gave the impotence to cover the continent and all that. But what I'd like to say is that without us figuring out that we can't keep operating out of fear and ignorance, and stupid is just not looking beyond your little box, not seeing the relationships between you and everybody and everything else. That's my definition of stupid.
Yeah.
Not seeing far enough. But we're totally dysfunctional and certainly not sustainable. And if we don't straighten us out, nature will.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Chris.
About to do that.
Yeah, and in fact, increasingly, it's looking like nature's going to. I mean, you know, we're seeing the global climate change now, the word that Frank Luntz says that the Republicans should use instead of global warming. It's happening. It's real. We're having these fires out west. We're having superstorms in the southeast. The climate is changing all over the world. Yeah, nature's doing it for us. And the last president, the tragedy of all this is that the last president to tell the truth about this, to honestly engage the American people in a discussion of this, was Jimmy Carter, where he put on a sweater in the winter in the White House and dialed the thermostat down to 68 and said the rest of America should do this too. And of course, when Carter was president, there were a lot of Americans remembered the 1972-73 oil shocks, you know, when we took Israel's side in the war and the Arabs cut us off from oil, and that those disastrous times, and they were prepared to say, you know, we really do need to stop our addiction to Middle Eastern oil because we don't want these guys determining our future. And there's a whole generation that's grown up since then, since Jimmy Carter was president and was telling the truth about this stuff, that doesn't remember that. It just doesn't. I mean, that was 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago. The year of the oil shocks, Louise and I were living in Detroit. She was pregnant with our oldest child. I mean, who doesn't therefore remember those times? That was 1972. And I remember people standing in line to get gas for hours at a time. I remember when we had to go to odd and even license plate days for gas. I remember when the truckers went on strike and the supermarkets in much of Detroit were wiped out, were emptied. People were panic buying. And we are just a hair's breadth away from that. And we could today supply all the energy needs of the United States with wind and solar, 100% of it. And we could wean ourselves off of dependence on the Saudi royal family. I realize it would place a substantial financial burden on the Bush family and on the Saudi royal family and on Halliburton and on the whole bunch, you know, all those oil industry moguls. Unless they did what British Petroleum is doing right now, British Petroleum has become the largest manufacturer of solar cells in the world. Right? And my guess is that they will make that transition. But they're going to do it later rather than sooner, unfortunately, and we, the people, are suffering for it at this moment. Jeff in Boulder, Colorado on the line, our number 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I've been kind of running through this in my mind, and I just wanted to run it past you. For a lot of America, the Rush Limbaugh crowd, liberals, the people who oppose God, want under God removed from the pledge, and we're opposed to Ten Commandments being in courthouses and that sort of thing. And quite frankly, I don't think that represents most of us. And what I've been thinking about is we've been talking to a lot of people with respect to this election and finding just a complete misconception about what Kerry stood for, what liberals stand for. I mean, a lot of people still believe that Saddam had something to do with 9/11.
70% of Bush voters.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, though, I'm thinking about like the story that came out last week with the ACLU and the removing, stickers in textbooks that talk about evolution. And I'm thinking, with everything else that's going on, with the corruption of our elections, with the deficit that we're running, is this the hill we want to die on, this evolution stickers and textbooks?
Yeah.
And I think that we could be serving ourselves a lot better if, as liberals, we were calling the ACLU, if we were calling our Democratic legislators and saying, we need to pick our battles more wisely.
I think it goes beyond that, Jeff. We need to be defining our battles.
Absolutely.
And there are a bunch of battles that just haven't even been discussed. I mean, labor rights, minimum wage, whether or not we're going to have tariffs, whether we're going to protect domestic American industries, whether we're going to protect small businesses from the predations of large corporations, whether we're going to go back to enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, whether we're going to have environmental protections in America. We need to be defining these issues and raising these issues.
And we're doing a terrible job of doing that, I think.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, and we need to get back to it, and wise advice, step one. Jeremy from Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the program. Jeremy was on the line. Let's go to Mateo from New Mexico.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling to get your comment regarding, I read an article that Saddam Hussein wanted to change the oil currency from the dollar to the euro.
Yeah, he had talked about that a year before a little less than a year before we invaded him. And then in the month or so when it became obvious to him that we may well actually invade him, he started doing all this. We'd be glad to invite in the American oil companies, and we will we'll write it into our constitution that we'll denominate the our oil in dollars forever. And all this, he got rather hysterical about it. But and there's a major theory out there, which frankly I think is a small element, not the large element. But there's a major theory out there that the reason we attacked him was because he was in danger of causing the oil to be denominated in euros.
I was just curious about your opinion on that. And then with Chavez from Venezuela being in charge of OPEC, I agree with you. I think we're on the edge of an oil disaster, and the way we're avoiding it is through our military might.
There you go. You're absolutely right, Mateo. And we're not just on the edge of it. We are full-blown into the middle of it. I mean, look around. Just look around you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges, the most apparent of which is the danger of fighting in Iraq, where 1,100 men and women have lost their lives. Another 4,000 suffered an injury serious enough to retire.
Harvard recently released a study that estimated the number of veterans who have no medical care at about 1.7 million.
David Chasteen is a director of Operation Truth, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. He served in the Army for 4 years and is now part of the Individual Ready Reserve.
The Bush administration, like a lot of folks, is really good about talking about taking care of soldiers. And it's very easy to talk about those sorts of things. It doesn't really cost anything. But there are a lot of guys out there with a lot of real issues.
Chasteen says that persistent underfunding has caused many sick or disabled veterans to have to wait for months for care.
Oftentimes we're dead last on the legislative priority list. And, you know, just as an example, in fiscal year 2005, they plan on cutting 10 VA hospitals and a little shy of $1 billion from the VA budget, even though we're still in a war.
As of January 2004, the VA has announced new rules that exclude hundreds of thousands of vets whose incomes are now considered too high to qualify for benefits.
Under the new eligibility requirements, if you make more than, I think it's $26,000 a year, then you're not going to be eligible for a number of VA benefits that you would have been eligible to before. And this obviously amounts to a pretty significant cut for a number of folks who were counting on that medical care, especially for retired folks.
The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Once you're out of the military, the VA only has to provide medical coverage and for ailments that are related to your service. And it's easy for the VA to say, we don't want to deal with this. We think this is a pre-existing condition, and you're not going to receive treatment.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Wouldn't it be a fine thing to have a president who talked about democracy and actually believed in it? Actually believed in it here at home as well as around the world? Actually understood it? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Jeremy in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good, what's up?
Oh, just want to let you know I enjoy listening to your show, but I've noticed over the past few weeks that
you're making what I consider to be inaccurate characterizations of the libertarians.
Oh, it's not just the last couple of weeks. I've been taking shots at libertarians for years.
Well, I haven't been listening to you for years.
Ever since I left the Libertarian Party.
It seems to me that, you know, your classification of libertarians as, or the neocons as having a libertarian bent is just completely inaccurate. The libertarians believe in a policy of military non-intervention. Libertarians seem to me to be the closest thing to classical liberalism that we have in this country.
Well, to some extent, you're absolutely right, Jeremy. What I was talking about was their economic policy that they imposed on Iraq. Naomi Klein wrote a brilliant piece about this that I believe was in The Nation. It was reprinted on commondreams.org. You can easily find it. In which she laid out the whole neocon economic policy that they were going to impose on Iraq. And, you know, and they did, in fact, with the new constitution. And it was the libertarian agenda.
I would disagree with that. The libertarians have hold no sway in this administration, and the neocons are, you know, libertarians adamantly oppose the goals of the neocons. And if you check out, you know, articles from Liberty or Lou Rockwell or Reason, you'll find some of the most principled and scathing attacks on the neoconservative agenda that you can find in any media.
Oh, I agree with you. With regard to the idea that we should go over and attack some other country and impose this on them, I agree with you. The libertarians are totally opposed to that. However, look at the economic, you know, basically what the neocons did in Iraq is said, we're going to create an absolute laissez-faire free market economy with very, very little government restraint, almost virtually no government restraint, and you know, no barriers, no borders, no taxes, nothing. And that is the libertarian notion, economic notion.
Well, it is, but it's not. It doesn't coincide with subsidies for corporations or anything like that. The libertarian notion believes that the check to, you know, a laissez-faire is that the government doesn't take sides. And
I understand, Jeremy. I'm sorry, we're out of time. I understand, and I agree with you that that's the libertarian notion, and that's. Well, we'll carry this conversation on. We'll continue this conversation. We've got to wrap up the show here. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira for thanks to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering our board today. To Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on RadioPower.org, to the folks at Cable Radio Network for getting us on cable TV systems all over the country in 29 states. Thanks to our sponsors, the folks in our chat room. Thanks to Jay for our music. And thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and